This is Be the Story. This week, the power of sympathy. Sympathetic characters are critical to a good story. That is, the audience must sympathize with your protagonist. They have to root for him. They have to want him to succeed. But if you ask three different writers how to create sympathy for your characters, you'll get 30 different answers. And you quickly conclude that before you get the real one answer to how to create sympathetic characters, you have to undergo some secret rite involving flaming coals and a billy goat. But sympathy does not need to be so mysterious. This week, we'll look at a couple of unlikely sympathetic characters, and I'll give you an easy three-step technique you can use to build sympathy into your own characters. That's coming right up on Be the Story. Hi, I'm Tim King. This is Be the Story, celebrating stories and those who tell them. I've made some small changes to the format of the show. Some changes both in terms of the content and in terms of the structure of the show. So be sure to tell me what you think. Very briefly, on BeTheStory.com, I posted my review of The Longest Journey. This is a classic adventure game. Well, I used the word classic advisedly because I didn't think it was good enough to be classic quality. What prompted this was that on a couple of different adventure gaming boards, people started talking about this game. I think it may be in expectation of the upcoming sequel. In any case, there were an awful lot of people today, as 5 years ago, when the game first came out, who thought that this was the best game ever created and the best story ever told. This time, there were other people who also said that the game was not stellar. But I remember 5 years ago, I felt awful lonely. It seemed like I was the only person in the whole world who had any reservations about the story of this game. And while penning this review, it occurred to me that maybe what has happened to my appreciation of stories is what's happening with my appreciation of wine. Basically, in an attempt to improve my blood pressure, I've been drinking 48 ounces of red wine each day, and as a result, becoming very, very acquainted with different flavors in wine, different kinds of wine, and so forth. It's been an awful lot of fun. But there's a downside to this, and that is I'm turning into a wine geek. It occurred to me that maybe the same thing has already happened, or happened a long time ago, actually, with regards to stories. Am I a story geek? What do you think of the term story geek? There's a blog posting at BeTheStory.com. Just post there and tell me, what do you think of the term story geek? Switching gears, the Catch Sync Writers Board is back up after an extremely long hiatus. Any of you who have been on the Catch Sync board before will be, I'm sure, very happy to hear that. And any of you who is a writer and has not checked out Catch Sync, you probably will want to check it out. I put a link up on BeTheStory.com in the right-hand margin. In a second, we'll be right back and we'll talk about sympathetic characters. Stay tuned.
I'd make a promo for my new podcast, but I really should be writing. Well, the podcast isn't new. It's 10 episodes in. I've discussed the issues people have with rejection, procrastination, getting started in writing fiction, and allowing yourself to suck. You don't always have to be perfect. I don't always have to be perfect. Except, I should be writing right now. See, when you're not perfect, when you don't have to worry about the rejection slips and the dusty, unfinished novel, and the fear that when you do finish it, it won't be exactly like you imagined it, you can just write. And when you write, you get better at writing. And someday you'll be good enough to maybe never have to worry about rejection again. And the novels will never get dusty. My novel is dusty. I should be writing on it. Published authors think I should be writing. I know because I interview them once in a while for my podcast. They talk about the advice I've been giving other unpublished authors and tell me their spin and whether I'm steering my listeners wrong. They're very nice, those published writers. Perhaps someday I'll be like them. Nice. And published. But to do that, I should be writing. So I'm going to do that now. But first, I guess I'll make a short promo for the podcast. Listen to I Should Be Writing, shouldwrite.blogspot.com. See us in iTunes, Odeo, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Because you should be writing.
Nick carried the bottle of vodka up the stairs to his apartment. He could already hear the sounds of football on TV and of Carrie entertaining his friends inside. The outside kitchen door never opened smoothly. He wrestled with the lock and let out a sharp F and S before hitting and kicking the door 3 or 4 times. He never counted how many. Carrie undid the deadbolt, and he just missed whacking her in the face as she opened the door. His friends greeted him with a hearty, "Hey, Nick!" "Hey," he exclaimed. "Gonna party!" He waved the bottle of vodka through the air. Several collective grunts later, he set the vodka on the counter and got some glasses out of the cabinet. "I'm gonna take off," Carrie said. "No," his voice was eager. "You can't go. The party's just starting." "Really, I think I should go." As she turned, he grabbed her arm and squeezed. His face was hard and his teeth clenched. "Stay," he ordered. "You gotta stay." Her mouth was perfectly straight. She gazed directly at him. With measured tones, she intoned, "Okay, I'll stay." Now, Nick is not a very sympathetic character at this point, is he? If he decided to drop dead right now, we probably wouldn't care. We're sympathizing more with Carrie than with Nick. But at the end of the episode, I'll show you a way to make us sympathize with Nick. And in fact, all the elements that we need to sympathize with Nick are actually already established in the passage that I just read. But first, let's look at some other stories that have strong, sympathetic characters. Characters that you would not expect to be sympathetic. It's very important to have a protagonist that the audience can identify with. This is true even if your protagonist is an anti-hero or some other type of hero that people would not normally sympathize with, would not normally identify with. Now, you don't want a protagonist who has no flaws. A perfect protagonist is actually pretty boring, and more than that, is unsympathetic. It's very difficult to sympathize or to identify with someone who has no flaws, who is facing no struggles. And you also don't want characters that are boring, that have nothing different or abnormal about them. You want characters who have lots of different characteristics, some of which are going to be very strange, very different, very new to the audience. But at the same time, your audience has to be able to root for the protagonist, has to be on his side. One good example, I think, of a protagonist that I had no trouble identifying with was The Godfather in the movie The Godfather. And if you haven't seen this movie, then go out and rent it right now. Don't worry, I'll wait. Okay, got it? Good. Anyhow, from the opening scene, you begin to identify with Don Corleone. What do you learn in the first scene? We learn that he's a powerful man. He can obtain justice even when the law can't. He can enforce his own justice, in other words. But people fear him, specifically because of this power. They fear to be involved with him. They fear that they could get into trouble by being connected with him, either getting in trouble with the law or getting in trouble with his enemies or getting in trouble with him, maybe. We also learn that he values friendship and respect over money. You can't pay him off. You have to respect him. What he does for friendship. So he will not be a mercenary, but he is willing to do great things, including to give justice as a gift to a friend. He's also more concerned with making friends than with being right. He has a daughter, and it's at her wedding that this initial scene is set. And he loves his family, even his son Michael, who's late for his own sister's wedding. We learn all these things before we're introduced to the first threat, which are a bunch of FBI agents snooping around outside the walls of the estate, writing down license plate numbers. So, Don Corleone. He is not a character you would normally expect to sympathize with. He is not like a normal person. In fact, he is a criminal. Yet he is the protagonist, initially, of this story. Another excellent example of a sympathetic character that you wouldn't expect to be sympathetic is in Pat Murphy's story, Inappropriate Behavior. This story was published on sci-fi.com and was then republished in the 2004 Year's Best Science Fiction. And from its publication on sci-fi.com, you can still read it in the sci-fi.com sci-fiction archives. I've provided a link to that in the blog entry on bethestory.com. Now, I'm not going to summarize that story, but I recommend that you read it if you're interested in seeing a very well put together sympathetic character. Now, after this brief message, I'll let you in on a little secret. There's something that's similar between The Godfather and Annie, the protagonist of Pat Murphy's story, and I'll show you a simple three-step process that we can use to make Nick a sympathetic character. Right after this on Be the Story.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years, on a thousand maybe worlds.
This is a Spaceship Radio podcast.
Are you in the bag?
No, but every week we'll bring you the best in science fiction radio from the 1950s.
Now here they come, ladies and gentlemen. The Martians.
And they will, every week, right into your iPod. Just visit www.spaceshipradio.com for all the details.
Prepare for maximum acceleration.
That's spaceshipradio.com, where we rocket you into the past.
Holy mackerel.
Thank you.
three simple things you can do to make the audience identify with a character. Here they are. Firstly, give your character a noble cause to pursue, some noble goal to accomplish. Next, put an obstacle in his way, either an internal obstacle or an external obstacle, that keeps him from achieving his goal. Thirdly, give him a great love or passion, a humanizing element. Make him a real human being with feelings. If you do these three things, you can turn almost any character into a sympathetic character. And if you avoid these three things, you can turn almost any character into an anti-sympathetic character. Let's look at how Pat Murphy uses these same three characteristics to establish sympathy for her protagonist, Annie. She has a noble cause to aid and rescue a shipwrecked man on the island. Also, there's an obstacle. Her mechano can only do so much to help the man, and the other people in the real world are too busy making demands on Annie to listen to her. And so she has trouble helping this man, getting a rescue team out to him. There's also a human factor, in particular the scene where she talks about how her mother always used to tell her stories, makes her seem like just any other little girl. She obviously has a love and respect for her mother, and this makes her seem more human. It gives us a point at which we can connect with her. The Godfather shows these three characteristics in its opening scenes. Don Corleone has a noble cause. Before, in fact, we're introduced to Don Corleone, we're introduced to Clemenza, whose daughter was beaten brutally by a group of guys. Now, Clemenza is asking Don Corleone to get justice. However, there's no respect in his request. Clemenza has never been a friend of Don Corleone before, and remember, he can't be a mercenary. That's not what he's about. He's concerned with making friends. Don Corleone also has a deep love for his family and a deep respect for his friends. You know, these things are human characteristics that humanize the character. We see him as basically just a normal guy who happens to be very powerful and happens to be an underworld kingpin. And you would think that those latter characteristics would destroy any chance of our identifying with him, but they don't. Now let's apply these three characteristics to our story about Nick. Nick released his grip, and Carrie returned to the living room where the boys were watching football. He poured some vodka into a glass and swallowed. He gazed for a long time at the open cabinet. He swallowed again, a dry gulp.
"Hey, what you doing in there?"
Nick's friends were getting itchy. Carrie walked up to him, gentleness and caution in her demeanor. "Nick, can I help?" He did not look at her. "Why don't you take off? I can take care of these guys." "Okay." She picked up her purse and jacket and left.
"Hey, Nick!"
He grabbed the glasses with one hand, the bottle with the other. A smile stretched across his face.
"Here's the party!" he shouted.
So what's different now? Before, Nick was just a rough guy. He was demanding. He was bossy, was bossing around his girlfriend. We assume that Carrie is his girlfriend. He bullies her around, and she does what he tells her to. But in this second piece, we see that he's reacting this way, but he doesn't like it. He actually gets depressed about it. He lashes out, but it's just to cover the emptiness that he feels inside. In fact, everything that he's doing is just to cover this emptiness that he feels inside. He wants to stop hurting Carrie and feels sorry for hurting her and for bossing her around, even though he doesn't actually say so. And so we begin to feel some sympathy for him. He has a noble goal. Not only to be happy for real, but to be happy with the people around him for real, and not to make those people sad. There's an obstacle that's preventing him from seeing that goal, namely his own reactions, whether they're habits or whether they're some part of his personality. You know, we don't know yet what is causing him to react this way, but he does not like it. And this is got to be a primary theme in the story, is how he overcomes this. He also has a great love, his girlfriend Carrie, which is a humanizing factor. He has feelings. He's not really just a rough guy. There's something that's happening behind that rough, hard exterior. So there you have it. The power of sympathy. How to put sympathetic characters into your stories. Please remember that all the works I allude to here are linked to in the show notes at bethestory.com. In any case, please visit the website and read the blog entries that are not part of the podcast. And if you like what I'm doing here, please tell your friends about it. And if you don't like what I'm doing here, please tell me about it. Next week on Be the Story, The Telling of Tom Sawyer. A look at a few storytelling techniques that Mark Twain used in his classic novel, Tom Sawyer, and how we can apply them to our own stories. That's next week on Be the Story. I'll see you then.